I'm David W. Berner, and this is The Writer's Shed. Well, you might call this day of recording here in the shed a fine, soft day. I know I've used that term many times, but it really fits the day today. It's what the Irish call a kind of a misty day of rain. We're getting one of those in the Chicago area today, and it fits to bring up an Irish phrase because we are talking about James Joyce in this podcast, Ulysses, and the upcoming June 16th, Bloomsday, the 100th anniversary of the publication of Ulysses. That's why we're focusing on it this time around. And an international celebration been going on for years of the book and the man and everything it means. The podcast is certainly timely this time around. We are dropping it June 1st because, of course, Bloomsday is June 16th, and the Writer's Shed podcast is coming out of Chicago, and we thought it would be a good idea to focus on the doings, the things that are going on for Bloomsday in Chicago. And it's coming back, really, after a COVID break, so it's a really special time for this particular Bloomsday. This year at the Atlantic Grill, a saloon, appropriately, in Chicago. Ulysses, of course, a literary adventure of the highest degree, they say, filled with all kinds of allusions and extended passages of stream of consciousness and wordplay, and of course it was a banned book at one time. So the readings at the Bloomsday of Chicago are going to be from actors and scholars and all the lovers of Joyce. And Bloomsday in Chicago will begin with a performance of selections from Dubliners Sung. That is a take, of course, on the book Dubliners by James Joyce. It is an album in progress by J.B. Pariah that sets Joyce's short stories to Celtic-flavored song and verse. This is part of the music from Dubliners Sung.
So I too exiled, sharing the warm secret gloom of my body under foreign roofs, from Poland to Paris to Zurich.
We have two guests this podcast, J.B. Pariah, the one behind Dubliners Sung, and the brains and the force behind Bloomsday Chicago, Jeff Helgeson. Thank you very much for joining me. It's great to have both of you here because this is Not only, we're bringing back Bloomsday Chicago after a couple of years hiatus here because of COVID and all the other issues involved with that, but 100th anniversary and the fact that we can get both of you together on this is great. So I have to ask, first of all, and I hope we can help the listener understand this too when we ask this question, but why is it important that we still do this? Why is it important that we still talk about James Joyce 100 years after Ulysses? Why is Bloomsday still important?
Well, I would say because it's a universal text. It's something that records a single day in time, but that single day in time is an extended metaphor for the lives of anyone who exposed themselves to that book. It's an ongoing pageant. You walk out of your door today in a metropolitan area of the world and you walk into Ulysses. The characters that you see on the street, the people that you know in your personal lives, in one way or another, they're all represented within that text. And then they're, you know, compressed down into 18 episodes, the course of a single day seen from a cubist and modernist perspective in a way that every time somebody reads it, and even as you reread it, you find that you make these connections and you're living in that world. It's a world that's inside your head that Joyce somehow managed to mirror. And it speaks to, I think, to everyone's experience who, you know, will invest the time and effort to tackle the book.
Yeah, appreciate that. Jeffrey, how about you, JB? Why do you think this is still?
It's a cultural phenomenon that's transcended 100 years plus. There's an entire subculture surrounding it with people from here to Dublin and everywhere. Not only one of the things I like about Irish culture, especially when it relates to the art, is they support the arts. They're proud of their arts. And James Joyce fits in that. And I would add that this is where my appreciation of the music comes in. I can go, if you're, I've used to attend all sorts of sessions, and I knew that I could go over to Dublin or anywhere in Ireland or England, and I could play these tunes, and they would probably be in keeping with everybody else. And what I like about that, it's a whole milieu, it's a subculture. It's like anything else. There's ones for dogs too.
Right.
But you know, Joyce is known for finding the poetry in the prosaic. And so I think as the years go on, you find that whether that's in television shows or the movie of the day, this idea of finding something that's phenomenal in the plain is likely to endure for as long as literature is read.
Yeah, so it's, you know, Jeff, you kind of alluded to it a little bit. You know, some people find Ulysses, and many people still find Ulysses difficult to read. Why should we be so diligent about trying to make sure that everybody that loves literature should at least give it a good shot?
Well, I would say for the reward that you're finally going to receive from it. We began doing Bloomsday in Chicago in 2004 for the 100th anniversary of the day the book is set. Now we're in the 100th anniversary year of its publication.
Right.
And I invited people who were in the spoken word poetry slam community and people who were actors and so forth who had no introduction to the text. I just gave them the passages and said, would you please read this and give it your best shot? And what came out of that has become this community, both of the readers and the participants and their friends and acquaintances who became the core audience. And now until 2020, it expanded to, you know, people. We were having to turn people away from the Galway Arms because we had run out of capacity for the room. And those individuals who had not read the book, who had heard about the book, became fans, have read the book subsequently, and have passed the bacillus on to others in a way that is just, you know, it's a marvel for me to observe. One guy, Gary Brichetto, who was an actor who bought his copy of Ulysses in Dublin and kept it on a shelf for 25 years, finally read the book and just loves, you know, having had the experience and being reminded that it was there, and then, you know, taking on the challenge. And so you're going to find things that resonate with you within the book. And, you know, it's birth, it's life, it's death, it's everything in between. And it's done in this rich tapestry of varying kinds of prose that gives you such an incredible experience.
JB, do you feel the same way? Is that why?
Look, I come from a hecatific culture, and I am unapologetic about literature, poetry, all of these things. I like things that you grow into instead of out of. And I think that the more challenging it is, the more I like to go into it. And the more rewarding it becomes when you've actually conquered it. And I would add to all of those Ulysses skeptics, well, take up Finnegan's Wake if you really want a challenge. That's a lot more difficult.
One challenge at a time.
One challenge at a time.
It's the move from cubism to surrealism, I think. And it's not one that I easily make.
But you know what I would add? What I would add to that is, I really think people would do so much better with it if they also took up the Irish music, you know, the sort of music that Joyce was listening to at the time, because it really is part of a larger tapestry, and I think you understand it more when you see it as part of that larger milieu.
Yeah, I think from your perspective, JB, that's part of it for you. I mean, you've written songs based on Dubliners and the whole idea of how music fits into this love of James Joyce. Why is that important to you to bridge that gap like that?
I guess I would say that it was there to be done. It's a sort of prompting in the inner spirit that calls for you to do it. I didn't do it with the idea of making $1 million. I didn't do it with the idea of being a famous or anything else like that. I did it because I loved two things. I loved Irish music, and I loved James Joyce's Dubliners. I went out to this show, Joel Sobel, who's a well-known musician, did a show called In the Deep Heart's Core, where he took Yeats's poetry and tried to set it to music. Mm. I didn't find the music particularly Irish, so I thought. And also, Yeats is a little bit more intellectual and esoteric than Joyce is more direct and immediate. And so because I love the music so much, I thought, well, why don't I just try to put this together? I know how to write songs. I love the music. I'll take the sort of ideas behind the music and try to put something together. One song led to another, and within a year or two, I had all 15 of the stories into 14 songs, and then some monologues and things like that. But yeah. I think, I guess the saying for it is art for art's sake. That's why we do it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's a good excuse. I like it. So let's talk about Bloom's Day Chicago. So what would one expect if they showed up at the Atlantic Grill for this event? What's going to happen?
Well, for one thing, there will be an opening set of the music that was just being described to you. And following that, I'll be making some introductions, and then we'll begin bringing up this series of readers. There are probably 18 participants, not neatly for each of the 18 episodes. Perhaps there are a few more, but there's some who are recurrent. Like we cast a Stephen Dedalus and we cast a Leopold Bloom. And then Molly finally is Barbara Button, who is also going to be participating in the Bloom's Day or the Dubliners project. And then we move in sequence, and I provide sort of narrative bridges. We can't take the time to read the whole book, which is what traditionally happens on a Bloom's Day. Bloom's Day in Chicago is a synopsis with excerpts. So we take 2.5 hours when otherwise it would take 33. And there's never been a real strong move to realize the complete reading of the text in the rooms that we have presented this. But we start typically with my publisher, David Getchick from Puddenhead Press, and he reads Stately Plump Buck Mulligan came from the stairhead bearing a bowl of lather. And then we move on excerpts of each of the primary episodes. So the Inelectable Modality of the Visible and Stephen and they at the headmaster's office, and then make our way to Bloom in his morning, folding back in time. And in between, I'm providing sort of what happens after the first passage that's read and sets up the next. And then we move fairly quickly through each of the cuttings and touch on what for me are some highlights from the text so that you get the story and you also get samples, sometimes fairly extensive. Samples of the language. You've had an experience. It's not the experience, but it's an experience of the novel. And so we work our way from Stately Plump Buck Mulligan to Yes, I Will, Yes, and try to touch all of the bases in between.
It's kind of like if you're not familiar, I mean, obviously you're familiar with the name probably, but if you're not familiar with the book, you haven't read it, you're kind of getting a Cliff Notes version of it. If I could use that phrase.
I'll allow that. I don't know if it's a copyright infringement, but it's on you. I'll allow it. And yes, but there's also, it's not just synopsis. And that's the thing. You get sampled the language. And in many instances, the people who are presenting it are very skilled and now Joyce affiliated, very skilled performers. And right. So it's not you know, just a reading of somebody who, you know, wants to read the book and say the words and allow them to convey their meaning on their own. But it's interpretive literature, and the moments are just spectacular.
And I should add that holding it in a bar is very much in keeping with, because the Guinness flows freely, the Irish whiskey. By the time an hour and a half has passed, you won't even remember what happens the last time.
And the more they drink, the more they understand.
So maybe that's the key to Ulysses, is to get hammered before you.
Well, a long way. Yeah. You know, the tradition of Bloomsday began in 1954 for the 50th anniversary of the day the book was set. And a group of people got together and tried to read the book at the various locations. But halfway through, by the time they got to Davy Burns, they had to give up for reasons of intoxication.
No, do they still, in Dublin, they still do that, though, don't they? They read, right. They read at the different parts of the locations of that are in the story. Right.
And there is a tradition where the whole book is read aloud, and it takes approximately 30 hours.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, both of you are steeped in literature, and I know the story, but a lot of people don't know the story of Ulysses and its beginnings and how it, you know, was almost never published. Can you kind of shed a little bit of light on that for our listeners to understand how it came to be when it probably didn't look like it was going to?
Well, who would you like to fend that question?
Jeffrey, you take that one.
All right. So Ulysses was written between 1914 and 1921. And it was written in various locations in Trieste and in Paris and elsewhere. And the project over this period of 7 years was worked upon during all of the Great War, World War I. And so it's interesting to me that it's set precisely 10 years before that conflict, before any of the inclinations, the geopolitical inclinations, which led to the First World War, began to manifest themselves. So it's a book that looks back nostalgically to a lost period of time. And I mean, drastically lost. It's, you know, it's an interesting coincidence that in the same year of the publication of Ulysses, 1922, Sylvia Beach, the Shakespeare and Company bookstore, T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland was published, which is similarly a modernist and very, very stream of consciousness kind of work that is completely the opposite. It is the aftermath of the war, when Ulysses is, to use my word from earlier, this nostalgic look back prior to the time of you know, the what at that time seemed to be the greatest conflict in world history. It was first published in serial form by the Little Review with Ezra Pound as the editor, and subsequently Then later, it was also picked up by The Egoist. The Little Review got cited for obscenity, and there was a trial, and the owners were incarcerated briefly, and then the trial went on for the next 10 years as to whether or not the book was obscene. And then it went, you know, the book has gone through many and many sort of editions that have tried to correct earlier editions, and you know, there's a conflict in literary circles as to whether or not the 2000 mistakes that were allegedly in the initial publication were in fact corrected. Were they made worse in subsequent editions? I finally opted for my modern language copy, and you know, have sort of stuck with it as my definitive text, but there certainly are others. And the obscenity trial finally was settled in the Supreme Court of the state of New York in 1932. And after that time, it no longer was a crime to bring copies of Ulysses into the States or to mail it, because it was the use of the mails to distribute obscenity, which essentially was the charge. And once that was resolved, and Joyce at least lived to see himself vindicated on that charge, then it had already had a reputation in literary circles, and then it began, to continue to build. And I suspect that the prohibition helped in terms of making the text something that was seen as, something that you wanted to read and desirable. There's this very famous picture of Marilyn Monroe sitting on a merry-go-round of some kind, reading her copy of Ulysses. And I suspect it was, from the reputation that came from being a banned book that laid much of the foundation. And I once had the very wonderful occasion when Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, would do lectures here in the Chicago area. He was at Mundelein College, and he was telling the story of how he smuggled his copy of Ulysses from Paris into the States by disassembling it and hiding it in the lining of his suitcase so that he could then go through customs and then reassemble the book.
What a great, I'm sure there's a lot of stories like that out there.
I'm certain there are.
Yeah.
I imagine someday they'll be saying someone smuggled Underground Railroad into a Florida school or something.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Or Huckleberry.
And the fact that it was a banned book and it was considered obscene, which you look at it now and go, it's crazy to think that. But why do we still teach it? You mentioned, that it has its long-lasting impact. But as far as teaching literature and teaching even to writers to read it, why is that still important? Why is it still important as a sort of a creative source?
JB, I'm going to defer to you.
Well, of course, I haven't been around the English Department for some time now. I wish James Fairhall, who teaches over at DePaul University, was here to explain in greater detail. But I will say this. It is part of a larger modernist movement. It was at the forefront of redefining what a novel could be. The case in point is, say, Molly's soliloquy. This idea, was followed through on by, what's the name? Mrs. Dalloway, Virginia Woolf.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then, of course, you had Remembrance of Things Past. And you had, so it's really part of a larger constellation of writing that sort of emerged at that time. And I think it's important if you're going to accept the idea of sort of cultural tradition within a literary tradition, and I understand that that can be debatable, I think it's quintessential to at least know it.
Mm-hmm. Even Ernest Hemingway's To Have and Have Not picks up on Molly's monologue and includes that the wife of Hank when Hank Morgan, when he gets killed, and if you watch the motion picture version, of course you won't see any of that. Humphrey Bogart wouldn't allow such things, I'm sure.
No, I can't see that being adapted to film in that way in any good way. But I think your point, JB, is absolutely true. I mean, when I was in undergraduate work, we never read Ulysses. It was talked about, but it wasn't something we had to read. I ended up reading it on my own later in life. And I have to say there were times I struggled with it, but I worked my way through it, and I'm so glad that I have. And now I go back to it. I occasionally just pick something up and pull something from it. And I I don't know if it's, it takes some time for it to sink in, or maybe it was just the right time for me. But I would urge anybody who feels maybe even a little threatened by it, to jump in, to give it a shot, to try, to even if it takes a while, it's worth it.
I would say it rewards subsequent readings for sure. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't expect you to get everything out of it the first time. I was fortunate that I happened to have it within an academic format, so we went over it very closely.
Yeah.
And learned a lot from that. I think it would be more difficult outside of that context. I'm not sure that today it is part of the regular curriculum. It would obviously be part of Irish studies.
Right.
And it might be taught as part of modernism. But I don't know that the typical English major nowadays necessarily has to come out with a knowledge of Ulysses.
I don't think they do.
You're not going to be bona fide Irish if you don't know something about it, at least at 10 Bloom Street, so you can fake it.
Yeah, I think that's very true. So let's go over one more time. Bloomsday, Chicago, happening at the Atlantic Grill in Chicago. There are other events in Bloomsday all over the world on that day. So if you live in a town outside Chicago, I'm sure that if you Google Bloomsday and put the name of your town beside it, you just might find something. So keep that in mind. But if you're in and around the Chicago area, tell us about where to go and what time and all of that.
7 o'clock, the 16th of June at the Atlantic Bar and Grill, 5062 North Lincoln Avenue. It's a block and a half south of Foster on Lincoln Avenue. There's fortunately ample parking. For many years, we had been in Lincoln Park, not far from the DePaul campus at the Galway Arms. And this year, although I thought we might be returning there, the room wasn't available. And so we looked for a new location and found what I think is a perfectly wonderful location that will accommodate us well. And we can open patio doors so that we can have nice circulation and minimize our risk of congregating to have this communal experience of James Joyce's Ulysses.
That's great. And anybody who wants to come, please do. And if you're not in Chicago, Google Bloomsday in your town, and I'm sure there's something nearby. There's something, even if it's at the local library in your small town, something's going on June 16th. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being part of this. And let's go celebrate.
Okay.
All right. Just say yes.
Yeah, just say yes.
You can find out all about Bloomsday Chicago. Search on Facebook and you'll see the Facebook page, all the info and photos there too from past Bloomsdays in Chicago. So a few house cleaning notes here for the podcast. My serialized novel continues on Substack, Rainbow Man. But we now have an official release for the paperback coming on July 15th. If you've subscribed to the serialized novel in the full version, you will get a paperback. It'll come to you in the mail, and as soon as it's ready and released on July 15th, we'll get that to you. You can pre-order the book, too, on Amazon and wherever you get your books if you haven't been following on our serialized novel on Substack. And coming July 1st, my novella Sandman, a golf tale. And we're getting some really nice early reviews that I'm really happy about. So hopefully, even if you're not a golfer, I think you're going to love this book. It's really about the human spirit. This has been episode 33 of The Writer's Shed. I'm David W. Berner. Our music is from IRA Music. Production and interviews is always produced in The Shed. You can find out more about Writer's Shed Press at Writer's Shed on Medium. You can also sign up for our newsletter there and find us at Writer's Shed Press on Twitter. The Writer's Shed is available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.